What's up, ODs and eyewear lovers? We're talking the latest trends in tech and eye care, so sit back, relax, and defocus.
Greetings, colleagues. This podcast is in partnership with Vision Expo.
Well, hello, and welcome to the Defocus Media Podcast. I'm Jennifer Lyerly, and I'm joined by Dr. Daryl Glover, who's with me in North Carolina this time. He's not in Nigeria today.
Yeah, it feels good to be back home, Jen. I miss my son and my beautiful wife, and of course, I miss you as well.
Well, that's so sweet, Daryl. You always know the right things to say.
Jen, you know, today's going to be a pretty exciting podcast, because guess what we're talking about?
This is a topic that I'm really interested to get expert opinions, because it's affected us a ton in our careers already. Private equity. I mean, I feel like there's no bigger words than optometry right now.
I agree.
Well, why don't we cut to the chase? Let's introduce our guests because they are experts on this topic. Please welcome to the show Jay Binkowitz and Dr. Michael Kling.
Hi there.
Hey, everybody.
Why don't we start just by getting to know each other one at a time? Ms. Binkowitz, tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do.
Thank you, Jen. Currently, I'm involved as the Executive Vice President of Business Strategy for Total Eye Care Partners, which is an organization that was founded by Dr. Ben Gatti and myself a little over a year ago. It has some amazing people that are in the leadership roles for the company. And I started out by launching GPN Consulting and GPN Technology companies. So over the last 15 years, I've been traveling 35 states a year, really helping independents grow their businesses, both from a co-management perspective as well from a information technology perspective. And it all started out at a little practice in Western Queens, Astoria, Queens, cultural melting pot of the United States with 144 nations represented. Dr. Mark Stadlin and I launched all of our careers from that little office.
Yeah, so thanks for having me. I am an optometrist in San Diego. And the first thing I tell you is I am not an expert on private equity. What I am is I'm an OD out in the trenches running my practice like a lot of our brethren. And what sort of leads me to this conversation is that I was approached by private equity about a year ago, and I spent a lot of time looking at the opportunity and thinking about it and considering it and trying to sort of analyze it from every different angle. And so I sort of fell into this role of sort of knowing something about equity just sort of by default. Since then, I have learned a lot, and I'll be happy to share with the little bit that I do know. For clarification, I'm just in practice like everybody else trying to decide what is the best strategy for me and what does the future look like? What does my exit strategy potentially look like?
I want to get your opinion on what is private equity? How does it work? How is this affecting optometry?
Sometimes there's a little confusion about private equity and venture capital and angel investors. And one of the things that I share is that private equity, what makes private equity different is they typically don't take risk. We think of Shark Tank and Mark Cuban investing in a company that is really not very tested. And those are venture capitalists. And what they do is they take a lot of risk on an unproven technology or business idea in the hopes that they will turn it into something very good, very lucrative. Private equity typically doesn't do that. Private equity has investors behind it, and those investors expect to have a return on their investment. And because of that, they can't afford to take a lot of risk. And I think one of the reasons that eye care has suddenly become so appealing is that we are a very big, stable industry, and in many regards, a very profitable industry. And I think equity sees us as the next big play after some of the other niche specialties that they've gone after, such as veterinary medicine and dentistry. So the first thing that I say is private equity is not risky investors or risky investments. It's very wise investors that are looking for stable industries, which is what we are.
Yeah, and you know, the lights really go on for the private equity groups out there when they're looking at a fragmented market. So when you think about dentistry and veterinary and physical therapy, chiropractor, even ophthalmology, it's not just optometry. We are all fragmented marketplaces, and that really does open the door for opportunities for private equity.
When I think about private equity, I oftentimes think, well, it's a little fish eaten by a bigger fish. Is there a specific amount of flipping that happens, or private equity sometimes happy to like purchase a certain number and then slow grow?
It's been my experience, and I've really gotten to take the deep dive this past year since diving in myself, in understanding that it's for what we're doing, in optometry, where you're joining together locations, they're looking for that 5 to 7 year lifestyle where they're going to look for a liquidity event versus some other private equity groups that might be family funds. There are family funds out there that actually look for longer term relationships. They're not looking for the flip. They're looking for long, healthy, secure relationships. And family funds are in our industry today as well.
Yeah, I agree with Jay. And I've seen some and had some conversations with some equity firms that their goal is very, very short term. For instance, Jay mentioned the fragmentation of the market. Taking 15 or 20 disjointed practices and herding them together like a bunch of wild cats is a lot of work. And so just going through the legwork of rounding up these practices and consolidating them into one legal entity sometimes is enough work for one equity firm to say, look, we've done our job. And simply by doing that hard work, they've actually increased value in the organization and often can flip that even without doing very much in the way of organizational structure change. In other words, without centralizing a whole lot of the features that they ultimately want to do. But my point is simply just consolidating the practices and getting everybody under one roof is enough to make a company feel like it may be ready to flip it.
Yeah, and especially if it's obviously it's within a region. So if they look to consolidate within a region, it becomes very tempting, put a nice ribbon on it and it's ready for sale. And you're right, Mick. You know, as long as they're in those instances, they're not bringing tremendous value as in far as resources and expertise and growth to those folks that entered into that relationship. But those folks entering the relationship would have then have known that they're looking for a quick flip.
Let's talk about some of the key players in the game. I mean, I know right now there's Capital Vision Services, Eye Care Partners, Eye Care Service, Partner Holdings. Who's doing it right and what method are they using?
Good question. And you know, even from my own organization, you have Total Eye Care Partners as well. What's the definition of right? You know, that's really, it's very interesting. So when I got involved, I've been a consultant for almost 15 years in the industry. I've been involved in the industry over 30 years. I've pretty much visited 35 states a year for the last 15. What's the definition of right? Right can only be decided by what the goals of the individual are and what their expectations are being met. So I don't think there are folks doing it wrong is my statement about that. I think everybody has a slightly different model. Everybody's bringing different resources and strengths to the table and expertise and knowledge. But at the end of the day, the real question becomes, what was that seller really looking to accomplish? And did he accomplish it? And did they accomplish their goals?
Yeah, I agree with that. And, you know, one of the things that I've noticed is that in the beginning, it seemed like private equity was very similar in their strategies. But what I'm seeing now is that there are several different models. For instance, there's the My Eye Doctor model, which is what I would call a branded model, which means we'll come into your practice and we'll remove your shingle and we'll put up the My Eye Doctor shingle because we have this established brand and we have this value on this brand. And then there's the what I'd call the unbranded model, which is it's somewhat left to each of the individual practices left to run in the physical manner that they have always been run. In other words, you're not going to change signs and nobody would even know that the practices were sold except for the people that were in the inside. So that, for instance, the patients would never even know that there was an ownership change. So that's what I call the unbranded model. And then there's what I would consider what Jay is doing with his group. And that is a kind of a premium concept, which is being very particular about who joins the organization. In other words, handpicking practices that they believe are very beneficial to the growth of the business and not just saying, look, if you want to sell, we'll buy. But being very thoughtful about who, in fact, they would allow to be part of that bigger organization.
So Jay, let's talk about that vetting process. What is it that you guys are looking at in particular?
Great question. And I can tell you that the model itself is really very strong forward, you know, saying that it's the medical model. And everybody uses the words medical model. So now we have to define what's the medical model. you know, we're always looking for new definitions. But, you know, when
that's a new buzzword in optometry, that's for sure.
When Dr. Gaddy and I sat down prior to launching Tolikia Partners, when we were literally on the road together speaking and just kind of like saying, hey, we need to come up with another choice. You know, independence, the best thing you can do for independence is provide choice. And whether it's an independent that's selling to another independent, an independent opening up their own new place, an independent picking which private equity organization they want to belong to, fair enough, our responsibility is to provide choice. With us, the medical model became a very significant statement. My own background being very strong in optical, Ben's background, obviously, with Paul Karpecki being very strong in the medical, we felt we were putting the best together to have that premium label and say, listen, we want our folks to practice to the highest level of providing comprehensive care in every way. You know, first question you ask someone is, you know, do they have an optos? What type of equipment do they have? When's the last time they changed your equipment? We want folks that are really in the game to provide fantastic care. And much of what Michael was talking about earlier about unbranded models, you know, the legacy of that practice is critically important to us. We don't want to change the chemistry. We don't want to change the name. That's what you're buying. And so so keeping that community feeling, that community acknowledgement of the business intact is very important to us.
So obviously the value add for the doctor who's looking to become a part of the private equity group, suddenly the value of their practice is a lot higher than what they traditionally be able to sell it for to another young associate doctor. But then also some of the responsibilities that may not be as appealing to the doctor might be taken off of their hands as far as business management goes. I mean, at what point in a doctor's career should they start thinking about an exit strategy, whether it's private equity or not private equity?
You know, that's a really great question. And over the past year, my God, I can't count how many conversations I've had on this now, and even most recently. You know, for those folks that are in their 40s, that's really early in the game. So if someone's in their 40s and thinking about getting involved, then they're probably really saying they want a career change. Because by the time you go through a liquidity event, you're barely 50 years old. You're at, you know, where are you after that? So, you know, I would say those folks in their 40s and 50s, that's the decade of what I refer to as extreme growth. Those are your years. And you should be building value in your practice, building revenue in your practice, building your assets, getting your systems in place, and making sure that when you do get to whatever age you feel is appropriate for an exit strategy, you're strong and you're going to get top dollar for what you're doing. Those folks that are looking for a private equity relationship ultimately are looking for an exit strategy financially. They may not necessarily look for an exit strategy physically. So even if the liquidity event takes place in 4, 5, 6, 7 years, they may want to stay on a couple days a week and stay in the game, and that's great. So it may not be a full retirement that they're looking for, but those folks are looking to take their chips off the table in some way, shape, or form. That's also going to support their personal goals.
Yeah, you know, there's so many different influencing factors that make somebody want to consider this. And we often, you know, think immediately of the financial advantages or impact of that. And if you look at this purely from a financial standpoint, the multiples that PE companies are paying now, they're basically prepaying you for 5 or 6 years of your future potential income. So if you have a longer time horizon than, let's say, 5 years, on paper, financially, it really doesn't make any sense to sell your practice, because even though you might be getting a premium, the earning potential that you have at year 6, 7, 8 and beyond is far going to outweigh what you're going to earn in a private equity deal. Plus, at the end of the day, you still have your practice to sell. Guys that are less than 5 years on the time horizon, it starts to really, really make sense. And in fact, if you want to sell tomorrow, it's probably the smartest thing you can do. Take your money and run. You probably won't get a buyer to pay you what you would like on the traditional market. And so if you have a very, very short timeline, it completely makes sense. It's a very easily managed runway to land onto, and I think it makes sense. When you're at that 5 year period, that becomes a really, really tough situation. I'm 50 years old. I've got actually 51 now. I've got probably about 8 or 9 years of gas in me. And that's about it. So I'm at that point of like, boy, this is certainly worth considering. But what about that back end of those few years as I get closer to 60? Is this going to be a good decision? And ultimately, that was one of the reasons why I stepped back and decided, at least right now, that it wasn't for me.
Well, Mick, you also built an iconic practice. And I brag about your practice all the time. Sorry. But
no problem. Thank you.
What you built, what you've done is what was a huge, huge leap forward. And I just wish everybody in the industry would follow suit with you and look at their business the way you have. Just tremendous, tremendous job and really bringing it to its full potential. And yes, I throw pictures of your practice in my own presentation. So I'll take liberty with that, too.
Yeah, but, please. No problem.
But you know, the interesting part about what you're saying is, that timeline is really important. It's also important to understand that our industry has created lots of challenges for folks that never went to school to understand how to manage those challenges. And they've overall done a relatively good job, but many folks have never reached their potential. And handling HR and administrative and billing and bookkeeping and MIPS and credentialing and the consolidation of the industry, it is emotionally exhausting for a lot of folks to go to the office every day and feel good about what they're doing in patient care, when at the same time, they're worried about so many other things. Because quite frankly, and listen, I'm still connected to Houston College of Optometry. I'm an adjunct there. I love teaching the kids when they're coming out. I love helping them on their path towards new practices. And that's something I hope I always have the opportunity to do. At the same token, you know, when someone graduates, they're not getting any more today than they did yesterday. So there's a lot of opportunity for failure with those folks. And if you take that and come 20, 30 years later and say, what did you learn? Those folks are all burnt out and saying, okay, show me a different way.
You know, you guys bring up some great points, but a question I have for you, for those younger doctors that may have 10, 15 years ahead of them, they're probably thinking like, you know what? There's a lot of disruptive technology out there. And also there's a lot of mergers, you know, Essilor, Luxottica. You know, they're thinking about how is this going to truly impact my profession and also my practice? I mean, what are your thoughts in regards to that?
You know, we, as Jay mentioned, we made an enormous investment in this profession a couple of years ago in our physical space. And I remember being at this fork in the road and thinking, you know, am I going to bury my head in the sand and pretend nothing is happening around me and just hope that I come out better on the other end? Or am I going to make a decision to do something bigger and better and different? And I think one thing that's important for younger ODs to remember is that eye care is not going away. In fact, eye care is getting bigger and bigger and stronger as the population grows and the baby boomers continue to age. And so the potential to deliver care for this industry is going to just continue to grow. What's important is that you understand that the delivery of that care is going to change, whether that be the way we actually do eye exams, whether we use more computer technology to do that, or how the retail part of what we do changes about the delivery of the types of products that we carry and how we actually interact with our patients and our customers are changing. And so I'm very, very bullish, and that's ultimately what made me decide to make the big investment. I'm very, very bullish on this industry, but you have got to be somebody who's willing to take the chances and be on the very front edge of the business. If you're gonna continue to do things the way that you've always done them, and carry the same products that everybody else is carrying, it's gonna be a really, really big struggle for you. And so it's practices that decide, you know, we are going to do something a little bit different that I think have a huge potential. And that is not in everybody's DNA. You know, making money in optometry used to be a lot easier. And I think for this younger generation, it's not going to be as easy as it was. And I think everybody that's considering private ownership needs to really look at themselves and say, do I have the makeup and the DNA that's required to really be able to tackle this industry? And if not, it's okay. Go work for a larger organization that has the resources. I would say just something to consider that going forward, you've really got to be willing to buckle down and just hit it head on.
You know, Mick, you really hit the nail on the head there. The It's interesting. So I, you know, as of the end of last year, I helped a new OD start a new practice. And I think it's critically important that we continue to help and see new ODs start. You know, even the courses that we're doing at Expo. I'm not doing a course on, you know, how to make a deal with private equity. I'm doing, all my courses are about, how do you run your business? How do you generate more profit? How do you stay more organized? How do you build sales? It's all for the private OD and the independent OD. And it's critical that we continue to support that and nurture that energy. And those who, as you're talking about, Mick, really want to, you know, step into that seat and drive that car and make that commitment, they need the resources and we need to help them. And so, you know, hopefully I'm around long enough to continue to help everyone and wants to either buy their own practice, open up their own practice. I think that's critically important for us as an industry and individuals to be there for them. But at the same token, what you said is really true. For those who are not willing to step up the plate and really take control of their businesses, probably are better off getting a job.
I love that we're spending some time talking about young optometrists, because in this private equity conversation, a lot of times what is affecting new grads or doctors 10 years or less out is not a big part of the conversation. If you are an associate doctor and your practice is getting sold to private equity, what should those doctors do? How should they prepare for this transition to still be successful?
Most cases I've seen, they're in some type of agreement with the practice. So there's some type of documentation, some type of agreement, some type of understanding. I'm going to say, to the best of my knowledge, and I won't say it's 100%, those agreements are going to be upheld from whoever the acquiring entity is going to be. But there's no reason why an associate shouldn't sit down with the doctor and say, well, what does this mean to me? What's my career path? If that associate was looking for an opportunity to buy into the practice, obviously that's not going to happen. But if that associate was looking for long-term stable employment, you know, actually with some of the groups coming in, they're going to accomplish that. They're going to have long-term stable employment. They might have better benefits now. They might have better 401k options. They might have better resources. So, you know, a lot of those things will actually improve when an entity comes in like that. But that's a very fair conversation that you should have with the owner. And it's going to be based on their initial agreement that they have in place.
Those are great points, Jay. And I think also, you know, when you think about the associate ODs, it kind of goes for really all of the staff, in that on one hand, there could be new opportunities that arrive for the associate depending on what their goals are. But the other side that we really haven't talked about is the change in culture that inevitably will occur, because anytime you change leadership and you change the vision of the organization changes. And the people that are working in the practice, whether that be associate ODs or even employees, are attracted to that business or that business owner for a reason. And when you change the leadership, you change the culture, and now you change that dynamic that existed. And so for an associate that went there thinking, well, this might be a potential opportunity for me to buy into the practice, like Jay said, obviously that's really going to change. If your goal is to have a stable job and to have some new opportunities for growth and maybe to make a little bit more money and have some retirement plans and that sort of thing, then these equity plays could actually work out better in your favor. But I think if what attracted you was the owner doctor and the culture that owner doctor brought to the practice, I think associates need to understand that there could be a change that occurs, and maybe it doesn't change in a way that's favorable to their position. So it's just something to consider.
Is questions I'm sure doctors across the United States are asking themselves right now, is this the place that I first started with, and will I be happy going forward? And obviously that answer is going to be different for every doctor depending on what's important to them in their career.
And I would encourage those associates to ride the train a bit. You know, don't jump to conclusions. Don't get nervous. First of all, someone stepping into a practice from a private equity position desperately needs them. they need the whole staff, everybody. You know, I know when we're looking at practice, you know, first statement out of our mouth, we want the whole team. Worst thing that can happen is, you know, obviously huge changeover. Nobody likes big changeover. Whether you're an independent practice, continuing to practice, or you're part of a larger company, nobody loves big changeover. They're disruptive. But I would encourage an associate sit down with the doctor, sit down with the new company coming in, ride the train a little bit, you know, see where they are six or 12 months down the road. It's not, I wouldn't see it as a red flag to say, oh my God, what is this? You know, maybe I should start looking and find something else. I would say ride the train and you might end up in a better place than you are today.
What I'm hearing you say, Jay, is it's time to negotiate.
That's right.
So obviously this topic has so much information that we haven't gotten a chance to really dive completely into on the podcast today, but you guys have a big panel and discussions coming up at Vision Expo West. So can you tell our listeners how they can learn more about this topic from you in Vegas?
Sure. So Vision Expo West in September, Jay and I are going to be doing a 2-hour talk on this very topic. And this is not going to be, because he sold to Equity and I didn't, this is not going to be a point-counterpoint conversation because I see the merits both ways, but really just a forum that we can share some of the stuff that we talked about here, share a little bit about our own personal perspectives about how we see our own unique situations, and then really just have an open forum of discussion, because I know there are lots and lots of questions about this topic, and we just want to have a venue for people to come.
Well, I'll definitely be there. I'm super excited. Remember, guys, it's Private Equity and Eye Care. Should I stay or should I go? September 28th at 9:45 a.m. And it's 2 hours, all right? 9:45 a.m. to 11:45 a.m. Make sure you're there. And guess what? This course is just one of two sessions available at Vision Expo West to learn more about private equity. The other is a special live event in cooperation with Review of Optometric Business and Vision Monday called Private Equity Takes Root. What does it mean for optometry? Visit the event section at visionexpolv.com to learn more. So for our listeners and followers that will be hanging out with us at Vision Expo West in Las Vegas, if they have any questions that they want to get to you prior to the actual lecture, what's the best way for them to contact you?
I'll give you Mick's home address and his personal cell phone.
Well, one way they can reach me is they can go to, I have a website called Impact Leadership. It's impactod.com. And that's my leadership training website. And on there, it's got all my contact information, my email address, phone number. They can call, text, email. Really, any way they want to reach out would be fine. So impactod.com is a real easy way to get a hold of me.
I have a pretty easy email also. It's askjay, at gatewaypn.com.
Awesome. Well, again, Jay and Mick, thanks for being a part of the Defocus Media Podcast. Friends and family, we expect to see you at Vision Expo West, September 26th to 29th. Make sure you join Dr. Larry Lee and I as we take on Las Vegas. Register for free at visionexpolv.com/defocusmedia. And special thanks to our partners over at Vision Expo. This podcast was in partnership with our lovely friends over at Vision Expo. I'll see you in Vegas. Okay, it's a wrap. Thank you for taking time out of your busy schedule to hang out with Defocus Media. We hope something resonated with you today. Please subscribe to our podcast and remember, we keep it 2020 around here, pun intended. We look forward to seeing you next time.